Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part two of this week's episode.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion, shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
I want to discuss this moment after Hypaxia is done healing Hunt and removing the poison from his wounds. Quote, Hunt's stare met Bryce's. The ashes and busy officials and warriors around them faded into white noise. And I really, really, really missed this moment in all my past read-throughs. That they have that TV moment where they stare at each other and everything falls away. The noise.
Yeah.
Visuals. And it's just the two of them. It's like Darcy and Elizabeth dancing in the empty dance hall.
In the Keira Knightley version.
In the 2005 Keira Knightley version of Pride and Prejudice.
You're right. I should watch that tonight.
I know, right? There's something really, really impactful about that moment that I overlook every single time.
Their small moments are so intense. And there's just so many of them. But the beauty is in how subtle they are. It's almost like SJM wrote it in a way that it's between Bryce and Hunt.
Yeah.
And not us.
Yes. I was thinking that exact same thing.
And we're barely privy to it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're lucky if we even notice it.
Yeah. Because this isn't about us noticing. This is about them having it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Very well. Very well done, SJM. Good job.
Yep.
Chapter 47, we get the hottest scene so far. Oh! And what makes it so hot? Well, Bryce and Hunt, they hug. But like, in a sexy way. There's a sexy hug.
There's noses rubbing up against necks and
don't
squeezing
rub
hands.
Your nose against my neck if you don't want me to marry you.
Yeah, seriously.
Right? At its core, this is a moment of intimacy. It's emotional intimacy as well as physical intimacy. So I'm going to be referencing the concept of intimacy quite a bit here and just know that it's a combination of the two. A hug is so powerful. It's been scientifically proven. I think you're supposed to like hug someone for up to a minute every day.
And everything. I don't do that enough.
No. With my ex, I timed us. I was like, hug. Minute straight. Not letting me go.
We might need to go hug for a minute after this
episode. It's like, just a hug. Yeah, I mean, it definitely is like you're supposed to hug for a long period of time and it releases oxytocin. And like you said, not enough people do it for long enough. It's like quick, brief things. And in this moment, they're holding one another. And it's such, and it starts off so innocent. It's Bryce saying, this day sucks. And Hunt saying, yes. And they're finding comfort with one another. But then Hunt starts to nuzzle her neck a little. And then Bryce exposes her neck. And then she strokes his back. And then Hunt starts to purr. And it's animalistic, you know? He's nuzzling. He's almost purring. She's stroking. You know, it's, you know, like these are very animalistic tendencies, but what it actually is our most basic human need tendencies.
So prior to this hug, throughout the previous chapter, we got lots of hints of a storm coming, and we finally see that storm come in full force. And this is all happening while Bryce and Hunt are hugging. There's this giant storm. I cannot recall off the top of my head, but I think in last week's episode, we talked about the storm and rain of this book being the rebirth and cleansing theme mm-hmm. rather than a bath or yeah. a shower being the rebirth or cleansing. And I'm going to argue, for the sake of arguing, that it's not really arguing because no one's talking back to me, but
I'll do it. What do you want me to do?
I'm going to argue that the storm here is clearing away the wrong assumptions Bryce and Hunt have developed about the murderer, who they think is Sabine.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to argue you. That's too good.
And that that the rain is a symbol or a signal for them getting back on the right track for this murder. Because what happens next? Sabine comes out and points a gun at them.
All I can hear right now is, like, imagining them hugging and they're holding one another. Hilary Duff plays in the background. Let the rain come down and mark my dreams. Let it wash away. My sad. You don't? God, you're in China. I can't.
I didn't like Hilary Duff.
Because you were in China. You didn't understand the cultural phenomenon that was Hilary Duff.
I did not. And I probably never will.
You were too busy looking at fake bodies in crystal coffins, okay? A quick spoiler for this next thing I'm about to say. When you started, spoiler for book three, when you started talking about it, I was like, that's an hysteria.
I did have that thought just now. I'm just like, sounds a lot like the Chinese have hysteria.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Sabine has come out and Hunt has his gun aimed at Sabine at the start of chapter 48. Sabine, on the other hand, has her gun aimed at Bryce's heart. We're starting to see a pattern in this moment that Hunt won't do anything to jeopardize Bryce's safety. She is first and foremost in his mind, which is why, instead of continuing to threaten Sabine, he chooses to back away.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to remember, because I continue to struggle to remember, Hunt has lost a lover. He yeah. has seen his lover die. So regardless of his relationship status with Bryce,
mm-hmm.
it makes sense that he's always going to prioritize Bryce's safety because he wasn't able to do that for Shikahar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quote, Hunt stopped his arm before it could cover Bryce's breasts, the heart beating beneath them. His battle suit had enough armor to deflect a bullet to let him absorb the impact. Better for him to lose an arm that could regrow than for her to. He couldn't think of the last word. He is in deep. And I love the way that it starts sexual, but it's not mm-hmm. actually sexual.
Yep.
And it goes into his concern for her. I thought that was very, very well done, given that we just had the hottest scene we've had so far in this book.
The hottest scene of hugging. It just cracks me up.
But it gets you excited.
Oh, boy, did it. So when I see this and I see Hunt and how he's coping through this moment and thinking about what he's lost, it just makes me think about how all of SJM's couples, you know, much, much older man, itty bitty child. And yep. that is still the same dynamic, even though Bryce is 25, Hunt is still several hundred years older than her. But normally when you have these other couples, I never really personally, me, I never sit there and feel like, wow, Rhys is a lot older than Feyre.
Mm-hmm.
He might have more wise tendencies, but I think because those characters are so young, like they're 19, Aelin is, I think, 18
mm-hmm.
at the start of the series. I feel like SJM tries to age them up maturity-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And because, in my opinion, Bryce feels 25,
mm-hmm.
which is more mature than any 19-year-old,
right?
It allows Hunt to feel older.
I agree. While for Feyre and Aelin in their respective series are matured up because of their circumstances, I also felt like the people around them were matured down. To be kind of at their level.
So that we as readers don't feel weird about a child being with a several hundred year old man.
Right, right. Where to your point, I truly feel at least, like Bryce and Hunt are star-crossed lovers.
Yes.
Because there's a lot about them that is not similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel it in this moment, and I feel it in other moments where you can tell he has suffered traumas that sometimes Bryce is capable of understanding, mm-hmm. but are sometimes beyond her understanding.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Hunt is still capable of goofing around,
mm-hmm.
but he's a very scarred individual
mm-hmm.
whose traumas prohibit him from making choices that other SJM male characters wouldn't. And I say this because I do see on TikTok a lot of crap towards Hunt, people saying that he doesn't have a personality.
Mm.
And I actually think that he's the one who is, I don't want to say he's struggling the most, because, you know, Rowan and Reese both clearly have their trauma.
Right.
But what we're seeing here in book one is what we're going to see in book three.
Yeah.
And you can't say that about Reese.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed. There is some truth to the phrase, you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true for Hunt. Not that he doesn't try. He does try. But there are some inherent truths that he about him and the way he's going to act that aren't going to change.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do appreciate his consistency.
Absolutely. And this is where I have a little note here. Crescent City 3 spoilers, because I feel like it's important to have this conversation here. We're already hinting at it. But this Hunt right here saying, hey, I don't want to make the next move because I've seen someone that I love die. Everyone who around me has suffered, is the exact same conversation he has in book three.
Yeah.
How great is that? As an author, mm-hmm. to have that type of consistency.
Yeah.
And yet he still grows as a character mm-hmm. from one to three.
Yeah.
But the trauma hasn't left. I really want to applaud that.
Yeah.
Because that is so hard to do as an author.
Yeah, because you kind of sometimes just want things to be hunky-dory and you want the characters to do what you want them to do.
Or they learn and grow up and now they're different and they're better.
Right. But I completely agree with you. Hunt is an excellent character study
mm-hmm.
from a writer's point of view.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of how much does he grow
mm-hmm.
and how much does he stay the same?
Yep.
Because he does both.
Because he does both. And that
is very human.
It's very human and it's so hard to do.
Yeah.
It's so hard to do because I feel like sometimes characters become caricatures of themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to, and I say this with so much love.
I have a thought of who you're going to say. Say it.
One, two, three. Cassian.
But also. You're Cassian, I'm Azriel. Yeah.
But, you know, only because we haven't had Azriel's book yet. But I will also say, yes, you know, I think the reason why I'm using Cassian is because he is the lead of his own book eventually. And he becomes a caricature in many ways. Mm-hmm. And I love Cassian so much. But they almost read like their own fan fiction.
Yeah.
And I don't think Hunt does that.
Yeah, I agree. At the start of chapter 49, Bryce tries to gain control of the situation because she's really thrown off by what's going on by calling Sabine a liar and insisting that Danica did not steal the horn, because we have now learned from Sabine that Danica stole Luna's horn. But Bryce is always going to lose when it comes to this situation, because at the end of the day, information is power and Sabine has more information than Bryce does. Bryce observes, quote, Sabine's light brown eyes, the same shade as Danica's had been, but void of their warmth, were merciless. And I want to point this out because this is the moment for me we start to learn what I'm going to call Danica's treachery.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't with malintent. Mm-hmm. But she kept a lot of information from Bryce. And this is really the beginning of that.
Yeah.
And
which is saying something, since this book started with her keeping things and Bryce discovering things about Danica.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And in this moment, for Sabine's eyes to be compared to Danica's, and they're basically the same except for a little bit of warmth, to me is a visual reminder that Danica is not that far off
yeah.
the apple did not fall far from the tree.
Yeah.
It just so happens that Danica was nice to Bryce.
And was she nice to Bryce because she was nice, or was she nice to Bryce because it's the opposite her mother would do?
Right.
And I don't, I still don't have the answer to that.
I think whatever the answer is, they did eventually
become
build
friends.
A sincere and genuine relationship.
Yeah.
But it didn't necessarily start that way.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for us to remember who Sabine is
mm-hmm.
and what that means for Danica.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not surprising when you think about Sabine.
Yeah.
That Danica was the way that she was.
It makes total sense.
Yep. I also have to ask, how does Sabine really feel about Danica? Because there's so much evidence to say she hates her daughter.
Yeah.
But there, it's also obvious. This is where Sabine and the Autumn King are similar to me.
Yeah.
In the same breath, she can have the most disdain for her daughter,
mm-hmm.
but also exhibit care.
Yep.
But somehow it's only on care in a way that because of how it reflects upon her. Does that make sense?
Yes. We already warned people at the top, a lot of Crescent City 3 conversation here. Spoiler again for Crescent City 3. This goes back to, and like you're saying with the Autumn King, what was SJM thinking when she originally wrote this one?
Mm-hmm.
Because she says, like, I was trying to protect my daughter. Or when she accused, like, you didn't kill Danica, she's my daughter. At Sabine's core, she cares about Danica.
Yeah.
So for her to end up being so off the chain,
yeah,
AWOL towards the end, it's just like, wait, what? So
yeah.
I don't know if SJM knew where their journey was going to go at this point.
Yeah.
My hunch is that when SJM started writing this book, she thought Sabine and the Autumn King were both going to turn out to be good. And I think the story took her otherwise.
Yeah, or if not good, redeemable.
Redeemable, yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it got to a point where they just weren't.
The absolute opposite. And it's moments like these where I'm like, okay, but you gave us clues for it to be this way.
Right, but I understand as an author.
Sometimes it just goes in a different direction.
Sometimes you're just like, I can't get back from this.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the leeway. Well, sometimes your characters take you in somewhere that you don't know, and then you're like, oh, shit, I kind of gave clues.
Yeah, yeah,
in the first book.
I kind of fooled everyone.
Yeah. Or it's like, or did I fool everyone, or did I fool myself?
Yeah, it's true.
So, you know, like, I'm holding on to this. SJM was giving her clues.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that the story took her and us elsewhere.
Yes, I agree.
For the first time, we see Bryce get embarrassed over her own sexuality. That's something that she usually owns with zero shame. Sabine says, quote, Amelie Ravencroft says you two were putting on quite the show a moment ago. A vicious, knowing smile. Bryce flushed. And there's two ways to look at this moment. So Bryce either flushes because anything to do with her own sexuality is tainted when it's in front of the wolves. No matter what, I think she could literally be there in a wedding dress kissing her husband. And the only reason why I'm saying wedding dress is because, like, you're in this world, you're owned by your husband, essentially. It would still be shameful.
Mm-hmm.
The other option is that this is her intimate moment with Hunt. And it was truly intimate and truly private. So, of course, she would blush because for the first time, she's feeling emotions for a man she's never felt these emotions at all before for a man.
And that was robbed.
And now tainted.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, sexuality is something that Bryce has no shame in.
Mm-hmm.
Intimacy is something that Bryce has no experience in.
Yes. Yes. And is very particular about who she shares emotional intimacy with.
Yeah. Because at this point, it's just been Danica and her mom.
Right.
That's it. I mean, even with the Pack of Devils, I doubt it was this level.
Right.
Connor, we know for a fact, wasn't this level.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot. Chapters 47, 48, and 49 are the tiniest itty-bitty little chapters. They're each just 2 pages long. Why? What are your thoughts on this?
So I like to think about this from a writing perspective.
Which it really is.
It's definitely a deliberate choice because if you think about it, 47, they're hot and heavy.
Yep.
48, we learn Danica stole the horn.
Mm-hmm.
49, Bryce's intimate moment with Hunt
is
was
ruined.
Not so intimate.
Yeah.
A lot is being thrown at these characters. A lot is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, to me, it's almost like slamming doors. Mm-hmm. We're slamming doors in your face.
Yeah.
It's its own type of punctuation to emphasize that this is a turning point.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me, was why instead of being one chapter,
yeah,
it was three separate chapters. Because it very could easily have been one chapter.
Could so easily have been one chapter. I get, and I like that. I think it makes sense. Because right now, we're about to get into Bryce not talking for 5 days straight.
Right.
And not eating. And just a few chapters ago, Bryce was not talking and not eating.
Mm-hmm.
So she's repeating the same pattern that she just was doing. Now, yeah. We need it to be much more meaningful now.
Yeah.
And it needs to have a bigger impact. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of each chapter is like a slam the door in your face. It's a punch to the face. It's whatever it is to your face. Yeah.
Slamming another book on the desk. Like whatever it is.
It's just another hit.
Yeah.
And I like that idea. Because again, this is a writing choice to deliver a certain impact.
Yeah. Bryce is reeling from this series of chapters at the start of chapter 50. It's the morning after Sabine, and Hunt is trying to make Bryce eggs, but she will not eat them. Hunt claims it's because he thinks Bryce is processing all this information that Bryce has just learned. And while that is probably true, I also think it's because Bryce has learned another thing about Danica that she didn't know before. It makes Bryce feel powerless. And in Crescent City 2, in Sky and Breath, she's going to get to a point where she's like, I just don't know how much more of this I can take.
Yeah.
Because it is a lot and it weighs heavy on her.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce doesn't eat again when Hunt makes her dinner. And I just feel like she's really missing out on this personal chef.
It's rude.
That Hunt has become for free?
Yeah.
I would take one of those.
Yeah.
And this goes on for 5 days. Every day, Hunt tries to feed her, and every day, Bryce doesn't eat. And it's the rare occasion that I say it's not because Hunt wants power over Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is happening is Hunt is trying to give Bryce power through the support of feeding her. But Bryce is not ready to accept that support.
No. No, she's in her own struggle, in her own world, and Hunt knows that Bryce is struggling, and it's also hurting their bond. Quote, there sure as fuck were no more hugs that led to nuzzling.
Sounds like such a, like, petulant child.
I know. It's like he knows that he's supposed to be good, but I want to nuzzle. I want to nuzzle your neck. Bryce is coping, but she's also punishing herself with the lack of food and therefore punishing herself with the lack of intimacy with Hunt. If Danica, someone who was her closest friend, emotionally intimate, could lie to her, then why couldn't Hunt?
Yeah.
You know, like I can see her putting up her own boundaries right now because mm-hmm. if I didn't know Danica, then how the hell do I know this guy?
Right.
Which is going to suck when the whole scent thing comes out, but yep. You know, whatevs. Plus, you have the whole Sabine and Amelie catching her, having this moment with Hunt, and Bryce has issues when it comes to the idea of moving on from Connor, and now other people from his pack witnessed her moving on.
Right. This same day,
yeah,
Bryce remembers the song.
Yep.
That they all sing about her.
Yeah. And it just, I think it's also more separating from Hunt himself.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about the symbolism that food can also sometimes represent, it hits you hard. Like food, in this case, food being intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see it in ACOTAR where food is something that you give your mate. You make food for them. There's a bond. There's a connection there. And Bryce is therefore rejecting Hunt's intimacy.
Yeah.
For 5 days. Yeah.
And he just keeps trying to give it to her.
I would cave so hard. I would suck at this. Be like, I want to continue to ignore you, but keep feeding me.
I will not say thank you.
I'm going to sit here and be upset. and open my mouth.
So at the end of this 5-day period, Rune meets Bryson Hunt at the gallery library. During this visit, Hunt talks and exposes himself a little bit more, talking mm-hmm. about the rebellion because it comes up. And in this moment, Hunt expects to be judged because, you know what? That bond he has with Bryce has kind of fallen by the wayside
mm-hmm.
through her having to process everything that she's processing. And quite frankly, he deserves to be judged because of how much he judged her at yeah. the beginning of this novel.
Yep.
Like, of course, he would be worried that he'd be judged because he's a judge or judgerson.
Yes.
Quote, only sorrow lay there in Bryce's face and something like understanding, like she saw him as he'd seen her in that shooting gallery, marked every broken shard and didn't mind the jagged bits. Under the table, the toe of her high heel brushed against his boot. And I want to tell you that that is amazing writing because the feels I get mm-hmm. just from their shoes touching each other. SJM is good
yeah.
because not all emotion has to be displayed on the face
yep,
or what people say to each other.
Sometimes it's displayed on your shoe.
Sometimes it's just about your shoe.
Yeah.
And I love this moment and yeah. the moments that Bryce and Hunt have together.
This is some 2005 Pride and Prejudice.
It really, really is.
You know, like just our hands slightly touched and now we're... Oh.
And then he clenches his fist afterward.
Clenched his fist because they touched. You know, this moment is so... I like to imagine that because Rune's there also.
Right.
I like to imagine that Rune, Bryce, and Hunt are all holding hands. Because at one point... Hunt says, you know, he's feeling guilty
yeah.
and he's really owning what happened in with the rebellion. And he says, I led them.
Yeah.
And then Rune says, but who led you?
Yeah. Yeah.
My mind exploded. I was like, oh, my God, you're right. Someone went to therapy.
Someone kind of. Did he?
I don't. That's showing me some. Therapizing.
maybe. Well, what I will say with the shoe stuff is. Bryce is showing support to Hunt while keeping it intimate between. And between yep. the two of them.
Yep.
And not letting Rune observe that intimacy,
mm-hmm.
which is sneaky shit, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know we were just talking about Hunt being very similar mindset in this book as he is in Crescent City 3. And I'm going to mention it again because we have a great quote. So spoiler for Crescent City 3.
I don't even know that it's a spoiler. I think it's okay for us to say Hunt feels guilty.
I know, but I just, some people don't want to know anything about it.
Yeah, it's true.
So I'm respecting those people. Quote, I led everyone into battle. I don't see how there's anyone else to blame for what happened to your people because of it. His words sounded as hollow as they felt. Hunt has such PTSD from this. Mm-hmm. And more than that, like the pure guilt. He has survivor's guilt.
Oh, yeah.
And he can't let it go. Like Lahaba, who wasn't even alive then, was born into slavery because he was a part of something that was bigger.
Yeah.
And because we're in spoiler territory, I am shocked that everyone was good. That Isaiah was actually good, that Shahar was good, and that there was like, oh, wait, there wasn't any malicious intent. That actually was a rebellion because of had a good intent.
Yeah.
Could have fooled me. I know. All right. That's interesting.
Yeah. I think what's really tragic about Hunt and his survivor's guilt is the fact that he didn't really survive. He was tortured for 9 years and then in slavery in like a personal truly hellish type of slavery that no one else has to do.
Yep.
And it's really tragic
mm-hmm.
that he continues to feel guilty for living.
Every single day.
Yeah.
He looks at himself in the mirror, sees the black crown, mm-hmm. and just feels guilty.
And that's a symptom of real life. That's, you know, people who live really through really terrible experiences,
mm-hmm.
continue to have survivor's guilt. And I'm like, you've done your time.
You did it, babe. You survived.
Yeah.
You don't need to feel guilty at all.
Yeah, but everyone has their own journey.
Mm-hmm.
At one point in this scene, Hunt asks Rune why Rune bothers dealing with the ox since You know, he's a prince. He shouldn't have to deal with dudes fighting because someone cheated on someone else.
Yep.
At this point, Bryce interjects, quote, because his daddy is scared of him, he made sure to get you under his thumb as early as possible, as if you were some sort of animal to be tamed. You know, I have to point it out, an animal's coming into the equation. And in this moment, Bryce is implying, and we're seeing, the Autumn King is the master. Rune is the animal. Rune is the dog to be tamed. And I think this is especially important because just a page prior, Lahaba had compared herself to being a bird in the cage. And we're seeing that theme come up again with relation to Rune. And Rune, because he is in a cage, gets defensive. And in this moment, I don't think he's being defensive of his father, but rather Rune's being defensive for himself because nobody likes to admit that they're in a cage.
Yeah.
And I think Rune gets pissy because he hasn't done anything to break out of that cage.
I mean, he has every right to be pissy. How easy it is for Bryce, who didn't grow up with the Autumn King, who has no allegiance, or not allegiance, but like ties to him, who gets to live her life as Bryce Quinlan. Oh my God, so easy to say, like, you live under his thumb. You don't have to. You didn't grow up in this, man. That's something that it's so much harder for Rune to just say, I'm out. I don't want to do this anymore.
And we have to remind ourselves at this point, Bryce doesn't know anything about how Rune was treated as a child by their father.
Yep.
So he has an extra layer of, like, you don't know what shit I've been through.
Yeah.
And you don't know what shit that man is capable of.
And I am happy for this scene because it does make Bryce more human and flawed.
Yeah.
Where, you know, she's not this, like, badass character who just sees everything. It's like, that was a really big, big wrong thing to say to him.
Yeah.
When you know the context of everything.
Yeah.
No note, just another cute otter moment. That's all.
I love that he grins.
I know, little. And then when she gives him the money, his whiskers twitch. Cute.
The otter is there because it's delivering information from Therian. And the information that Therian provides helps Bryce put two and two together. And it's at this moment that she realizes, oh, Danica wasn't actually killed by the Crystallos. Like, that is something we made up. And, you know, I just want to say, see what a little bit of information can do? Just, it makes a difference in life.
It really does. Learn more, kids. Chapter 51 starts with Bryce prepping the summoning circle. She runs the black salt through the food processor.
So hilarious. Like, this is the type of comedy gold that SJM is capable of.
Absolutely. It is really freaking funny. And we have this quote. For something she dropped 10 grand on, Bryce didn't treat it with any particular reverence. She chucked it into the kitchen cabinet as if it were a bag of chips. And while it's hilarious and I just love the visual of it, it does remind me at the start of the book when Danica threw her sword into the closet at the gallery. And we talked about it then of saying, hey, where's the respect? Do you not care about it?
Yeah.
And I want to say maybe this is Bryce channeling Danica for strength.
Oh, that's a good point. For me, it just displays, again, their age difference.
Yeah.
That Danica and Bryce as 20-something-year-olds, you don't know how to treat anything with reverence at that age. when it truly should require it, at least, I think that comes with time.
It comes when you've made money and then you buy something and you say, I just spent a shit ton of money on this. I am not going to.
Yeah, no,
my first bigger purchases were just very much like, nope, this is mine. I am going to take real good care of this.
Yep.
In the salt circle, Hunt gets distracted because, of course, he does. He's by the girl he has a crush on.
Yeah.
Quote, his fingers twitched as if they'd reach for that silken length of her hair, run it between them, wrap it around his fist and draw her head back, exposing that neck of hers again to his mouth, his tongue, teeth. Hunt wants to get back to that roof. He really wants to nuzzle that neck.
You know what it also made me think of is in the elevator after they see Sandril, Bryce wraps her hair around her fist.
Yep.
And exposes her neck.
He's just like,
he has been lusting after her that for neck. A long fucking time.
He's like, I want to bite your neck. And it's this act of submission. We're coming back to that animalistic instinct, right? The need to expose your pulse, your, you know, one of the easiest places to die. And it's the like, hey, baby, I'm willing to submit. And that's what he wants.
He wants her to submit to him.
Yeah, because she's not going to submit to anyone. And even though he wants her submission, he still wants her to fight. Quote, even though arguing with her was nearly as enticing as foreplay.
So I want to argue that he actually doesn't want her to submit. He wants to claim.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm you don't have to argue. You sold.
Okay, great.
I'm on board.
but I think because he likes, as we can see, he enjoys arguing with her. Mm-hmm. He enjoys that they're equals.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop him from wanting to claim her as his.
Yeah. These are the moments where it's like, see, he's still an alpha too.
Yeah, he is. He is.
Yeah.
And, you know, good old Bryce learned from Sabine, information is power. So you know what? Let's withhold the information.
Yeah.
And so Bryce is the powerful one in this scene. Hunt might be a demon hunter, but you know what he doesn't know? He doesn't know a prince.
Mm-mm.
But Bryce does. Bryce is the royal one. She has royal connections. And she uses that to her advantage. And she says at the end of the scene, like, I didn't want you to stop me.
Yeah.
And I don't blame her.
Yeah.
Because Hunt would.
Absolutely. What? Sorry, that one line when he was complaining, she's like, don't be a narc.
Yeah.
Like, I am a narc.
Yeah. I thought it was so funny.
So funny.
When Adis appears, the juxtaposition of his appearance and how Bryce and Hunt are reacting is hilarious to me. Quote, Bryce grinned up at Hunt as his heart stopped dead. Surprise! And this is why we love her.
Yeah.
And it just continues to go back to this point we're making about their age difference and how they act and what, mm-hmm. how their life experience informs how they view things.
And how their dynamic will continue to reflect this in book two, book three, where Bryce is going to move forward with her plan. And it's going to be a nice little surprise for Hunt.
Always. And he's not always going to enjoy it.
Nope.
Hunt has whiplash from the shock of every bit of conversation between Bryce and Adis, and it doesn't need to be analyzed because it's just funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the analysis is in the breadcrumbs.
Yep.
What I do want to say is that we should be afraid of Adis, and the narrative is telling us to be afraid. The cold is violent. Quote, nothing could protect against the cold this demon brought with him. It pierced through every layer, snatching the breath from Hunt's chest with clawed fingers. The demons in Adis's domain have scales, fangs, claws, quote, brute muscle, and snarling with blind animal rage. And Adis is the ruler of these demons.
And when I read that the first time, I was just thinking, sold. Okay, so this is the love interest. Got it. I ship them.
I am here for it.
Yeah.
Just like all of the powerful men in SJM's books are pretty boys. It's just...
Well, Hunt calls him a pretty boy. Which is an insult because I think he's a little threatened of this random hot guy that just came up.
Yeah.
I think it's him kind of saying he's soft. I got more muscles than him.
No, exactly. Yeah. By comparison, Hunt is a brute.
Yeah.
Which, when you think about all the other men, he's probably the bulkiest out of all of them.
Yeah.
So it's just great. It made me feel like SJM was making fun of her own...
self. Yeah, her own. I think she does that a lot in this book.
Yeah, I do too.
Cat Daddy says that Bryce was sad when he last saw her, and Bryce is sad now. And, quote, it took Hunt a moment to process it. The words, the bit of history, and the bit of now. It's interesting to me that Hunt is so stricken by the idea that Bryce is sad now. just as she was sad then. What I think is kind of, lack of a better word, funny about it is, did the 5 days of not eating or speaking not clue you into her being sad? But I think what was a big moment for him is that here's another person, demon, entity that sees the sadness in mm-hmm. Bryce. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the fact that he hears it is what hits Hunt harder. He's hearing it said out loud, like, oh, yeah. you're sad.
You know, it's so interesting. I've always read that line differently.
Oh, how did you read it?
So for me, I think I always understood it to mean, so it took Hunt a moment to process it, the words, the bit of history and the bit of now. The history being Adis willingly chose to see Bryce mm-hmm. once long ago. That's a shock.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's willing, like, it's almost like there's a connection, like, this demon prince is willing to come when Bryce is sad. It's not mm-hmm. that Bryce is sad. It's the demon's willingness to appear, mm-hmm. I think. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I always understood it.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a definitive way, because I'm not entirely sold either on, like, it's one of those open-ended things.
Yeah, it's vague intentionally.
Yeah. So I don't think it's bad writing. No, I don't think it's bad writing. It's just, but it is vague intentionally.
Yeah.
Yep.
Another fun thing about this whole scene is that Bryce always manages to piss Hunt off, but it never stops him from being concerned mm-hmm. about her. And that's just their dynamic, which is always fun for me. I want to read this one quote. The cold burned Hunt's lungs. They could last only minutes at this temperature before their healing abilities started churning. And despite Bryce's fade blood, there was a good chance that she might not recover at all. Without having made the drop, the frostbite would be permanent for Bryce, as would any digits or limbs lost. And you know what that tells me? Hunt is really worried about Bryce's toes. And he's just too shy to say it.
Not the toes.
How dare you jeopardize your toes, Bryce?
Anything but the toes.
We have this information battle going on where Bryce has been withholding information from Hunt. But you know what? Adis is going to now withhold information from Bryce. And Bryce tries to get as much information as she can from Adis about everything that's going on with Luna's horn, with the killer, etc. And there are just so many breadcrumbs. We can't talk about them till we get to the breadcrumb section.
Yeah, it should just be a discussion when we get there rather than.
Yeah. So there is so much content. So I will let you go on to your next note, Jack.
Thank you. So there's this moment when Hunt gets a little sassy at Cat Daddy and, quote, Bryce squeezed his arm. He stepped on her foot hard enough to get her to cut it out. I know it's meant to be a comedic moment, and it is a comedic moment, and stepping on a foot is no big deal. And I'm not saying that I think Hunt is an abuser, but I just want to point out that Hunt is willing to hurt Bryce to help Bryce.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which we see with several men in this series.
Yep.
I also want to say he's at least double her weight. He's probably wearing steel toe shoes.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to hurt like a bitch.
Oh my God. I can definitively say that would not pull that shit again on me. It would just be, I would just look and be, probably start crying. Not because of pain, but just shock of, excuse me.
How dare you?
You're willing to hurt me?
Hunt is. I'm sure he's also willing to choke you in bed. That's fine.
Sir, we just found some body parts over here. Found some toes and a shoe. Mike, all right, burn those too.
I thought you wanted to protect the toes. We might not ever record on a Friday night again after this. People would be like, please never do that again.
I like Willem.
What?
I've decided to call him Willem.
You're
Hi. I work over here at the Ox. I do the crime scenes.
I process the evidence. So we wrap up this chapter in a really, really beautiful way where once again, someone is withholding information. Bryce has been withholding information from Hunt. Adis is withholding information from Bryce. And then, to top it all off, the Fae and the Autumn King have been keeping information about special tests that could have been done to help find Danica's killer.
Mm-hmm.
And Bryce is not about it. And that's where the chapter ends.
Dun, dun, dun. So from here on out, Crescent City 3, spoiler.
Yeah.
It's on the table.
It's, yeah.
You, like, I know normally in other episodes we'll separate them, but for this one, there's just too much to talk about.
We will still have breadcrumbs that are multiverse versus non-multiverse.
Yes, but if you've read the third book.
Yeah, but the third book is up for grabs in both sections.
Mm-hmm.
In chapter 44, quote, talented, Hunt had heard Naomi say of Ethan. Beyond his skill on the sunball field, Ethan Holstrom was a gifted warrior. Naomi always said that despite being cocky, Ethan was a solid male, fair-minded, smart, and loyal. Sounds like the makings of an alpha.
Mm-hmm,
maybe
mm-hmm.
even a prime.
Yeah. In chapter 45, in reference to the third book, quote, footages of lines of human-built mech suits going toe-to-toe with elite Imperial legions on a muddy battlefield. Sounds a lot like the final battle.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Also in chapter 45, when Hunt goes to the bar, Bryce thinks, quote, she'd gleaned that Hunt was invited often to the bar but had never gone. Why he was going tonight for the first time? Could it be related to Synth? Or maybe he just wanted to make friends.
Yeah, I mean, I know Isaiah's there. Victoria gives him a quote-unquote knowing look. Literally trying to find any clue.
Yeah.
As to Hunt
betraying. I assumed Victoria's knowing look was like, I know you want to dick her down.
Yes, I figured so. I figured as well, but literally trying to help SJM at any point right now.
That's fair.
In chapter 46, after Bryce and Hunt kill the Crystallos demon that attacked them, quote, was the horn here in the park? Had she somehow unwittingly come near it? Turn around. Yes, Bryce, it's there.
Get a mirror. Also in chapter 46, after Bryce and Hunt tell Micah they think Sabine is the murderer, quote, come to me when you have concrete proof or if you find that horn. If someone's gone to so much trouble over it, there's a damn good chance they've found a way to repair it. I won't have the city endangered by a power-hungry bitch. Don't fuck this up for me. Micah's not actually expecting proof of the murder.
No.
He just wants the horn.
In chapter 48, quote, Sabine went wholly still, nearly as still as the Fae could go because the shifters are Fae people.
That's right. In chapter 50, quote, it was to Bryce's face, the memory of her scent and that breathy moan she'd made as she arched against him that he'd come hard enough he'd seen stars. I know for a fact. SJM was cackling maniacally when she wrote that sentence. It might be a common phrase, but you cannot tell me she did not specifically choose that because Bryce is starborn.
Right? And then the fact that in the third book, he fucks and literally sees stars.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously.
Also, in chapter 50, we learned the Crystallos demon was, quote, made from the blood of the first starborn prince and the essence of the Star Eater himself. Prince Apollyon has a reputation of experimenting, and someone in the room is a result of those experiments. Hunt, you are the sun.
I mean, both in book one and two, we learn of Apollyon experimenting.
Yep, yep. No, it's totally.
And creating creatures. Like, the groundwork was there.
Mm-hmm.
So, call me impressed. Also in chapter 50, quote, the Hind herself was particularly fond of using them, the Gorsian stone shackles, as she and her interrogators broke the veneer among the rebel spies and leaders. Like Hunt and Rune will be interrogated.
Yep. In chapter 51, quote, Adis smiled, looking him over. A fallen warrior with the power of, Adis's groomed brows lifted in surprise. His blue opal eyes narrowed to slits, then simmered like the hottest flame. What are you, doing with the black crown on your brow. He's just now realizing Hunt's true origin and doesn't like that he's a slave. Also, technically, I guess that's his nephew.
Yeah, true.
Two times over.
True. Also in chapter 51, Atis tells Bryce and Hunt that, quote, it is dreadfully amusing, the stories the Asteri have spun for you. So many stories, and they haven't even begun to unravel them.
Oh my God. It, like, please go and reread this chapter, people. It is just so much info.
So much.
Still in that chapter, Atis says to Bryce, quote, what blinds an oracle? The oracle did not see, but I did, because he knows that she is starborn, because yep. He's been plotting for this for a very long time.
Which makes the last chapter in this, or epilogue or whatever, in this book make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Still in chapter 51, Atis also says to Bryce, quote, make the drop, Bryce Quinlan, and find me when you are done. It takes her a while, but she gets to it eventually.
Mm-hmm. Finally, in this chapter, when Bryce recounts her first interaction with Atis to Hunt, she explains that, quote, Jespa told me that princes can sneak through cracks in either rift, taking form from common animals. She knows this because she's interacted with Prince Atis, Jespa, that being Jespa, and we're going to see that at the end of the book.
Yeah, that was, I missed that until the analysis, and I was like, it's right there in writing.
Mm-hmm.
Now we move on to multiverse thoughts and breadcrumbs, which there are fewer, but still Crescent City 3 spoilers.
Yep.
Rune tells Hunt, quote, the Star Sword has no power without the knife. The sword was part of a pair. A long-bladed knife was forged from the iridium mined from the same meteorite which fell on our old world. Truth teller.
Yeah.
Did we just overlook this?
It's so obvious knowing.
Yeah.
Where I'm sure when SJM wrote it, she was worried it would be obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. And people like Lily caught it. But did any of us catch it prior to the end of Sky and Breath?
I don't think so.
Yeah, no.
In chapter 51, Atis tells Bryce and Hunt, quote, hell is as real a place as Midgard, though most of us would have you believe it wasn't. Your kind, fallen, were made in Midgard by the Asteri. But the Fae, the Shifters, and many others came from their own worlds. The universe is massive. Some believe it has no end. Or that our universe might be one in a multitude, as bountiful as the stars in the sky or sand on a beach. Like, I knew this was definitely taken for granted the first time I read it. You know, he even talks about, like, the rift opening up to other worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Just...
We just didn't care. We were only cared about Danica and finding her killer.
No. We only cared about Cat Daddy getting with Bryce. That was me.
We just wanted someone to have sex.
At this point, literally would take anything. I just needed someone to kiss someone.
But it's amazing how much we overlook. We're just disgusting. Like, oh, it's just more world building.
It's disgustingly. It's like I gag at things. When I was reading it, I was just mad at myself the whole time.
Yep, yep, yep.
This week's Bryceism, and I just want to say thank you for emailing us about your Bryceisms and how they've been helping.
Yeah, so, it's been really fun to read those.
Yeah, so if, you know, please keep telling us, because we like it, and it's inspiring. So this week's Bryceism, find a way to open yourself up to help, even when your instincts tell you not to, because your instincts are wrong.
It's okay to be vulnerable.
It's okay to be vulnerable, yeah. Sometimes our brains lie to ourselves.
Yeah.
Most of the time, our brain will lie to ourselves.
My brain is so good at lying to me.
Mine is like,
it's called cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, yeah.
So going back to the question, at the start of this episode, Jack,
mm-hmm.
How aware is the reader of the foundational components of the series plot that SJM is building in these chapters?
So if the...
And so before we dive in...
Yeah.
Spoilers for everything SJM has written.
Yep, yep. If the reader is you and me, then not aware at all. It's so
obvious now that we know what we know.
Yeah, to the point where it's embarrassing thinking about what I've said before.
I know. I listening to past episodes that we've already recorded before reading Flame and Shadow for this season.
It's a little cringe.
It's so cringe.
Yeah. I know. I'm happy I don't listen to that now. I'm like, they're edited. They're gone now. They're safe. I do think that the first, people joke about this book, that the first 100 pages is a struggle because it's SJM world building. Mm-hmm. And now I'm wondering how much of a red herring that was.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were taking so much information. Now, I think she needed to dump all that info on us anyway. Like, I don't think that, you know, I don't think that she was going to not tell us.
Right.
But there's something about all this info dump that we got earlier kind of trained us to be superficial readers on this part.
Yeah, we almost become numb to the info.
Yep. Because now it's more information. Like, we just, and the fact that this is a, at the core, a buddy cop murder mystery.
Yeah.
And we're keep, like, we just found out Danica did steal the horn. Yeah. Sabine didn't. Like, we're just getting so much information. This whole book is information overload. Again, it has to be. It's a, you know, buddy cop murder mystery.
Right.
And SJM just drops all this stuff that is so clear to the third book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she spits in our face.
She does. What I think I love most about this section is how much I'm realizing SJM is really good at distracting her readers.
Yeah.
In a way that we have all the information. It's like Bryce having to prove herself to go to Lunathian.
Mm-hmm.
Randall gave her all the tools. She had to prove herself. SJM gave us all the tools.
And only Lily and Rosie kind of made it through. The rest of us were just like, Cat Daddy? Is it still you? You know, before Crescent City 3 came out, there was tons of theories that Hunt was the one who killed Danica.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they kept insisting that Hunt was the, quote, personal assassin to Micah.
Oh, interesting.
And that so many people were thinking Hunt's a bad guy, Hunt's all this stuff. And it is as straightforward as she makes it in this book.
Yeah.
If SJM, and I will fight this till my dying day, I think that Sabine and the Autumn King were initially written to be characters that weren't as bad as they ended up being. But if we were to take this verbatim, everything she tells us here is what happens in the third book.
Yeah. Regardless of SJM rewriting Flame and Shadow, there were certain things she knew she was going to achieve in that mm-hmm. book. And she laid the groundwork here.
Mm-hmm.
And we as readers are so oblivious to it because she is so talented at diverting our attention.
Yep.
We're more worried about the sexual tension. We're more worried about who is Danica's true killer if it's not Sabine.
Yep.
That we completely overlook the information that is foundational for the second and third book.
Yeah. And the foundation's all there. And then even the things that we're not aware of or are aware of, like their sexual tension, like their friendship and their dynamic, all of this is still everything from the actual plot to the character development
is flying under the radar.
Flying under the radar, but is so solid.
Yeah.
And nothing that we've seen at this point makes me think, oh, wow, book three, they really change. Because that's another thing that we haven't had a chance to talk about is that the general reception, that not general, but some of the feedback I've seen on TikTok are people saying that Bryce really changes come book three and Hunt really changes. And they're the same people.
Yeah.
What we're seeing, Bryce running headfirst into something that she's not going to tell Hunt about, but it's for the greater good.
Yeah.
Hunt,
oh, she does it over and over again.
Constantly. Hunt struggling with the concept of doing the right thing versus reliving past trauma.
Yeah.
What we're seeing is exactly what we're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, for me, I love reading SJM because I trust her.
Yep.
As a writer.
Yep.
To do the work
mm-hmm.
to be convincing.
Yep.
And I don't have to be sit here and be mad because I'll just go for the ride and be like, take me on the ride.
Yeah. People are so mad about the idea of Ethan and Therion being the next focus on the upcoming books for...
Just got to wait for the ride, guys.
Right? I'm kind of... You know what? She can convince me of anything.
she's going to make me fucking love him.
Right? By the end of it, we'll be hardcore Therian and Ethan stans.
Yeah.
You know what it is? He got into, people were, the people who were defending Therian were just saying, excuse me, she just gave us a marriage of convenience plot. How dare you?
Love it.
How dare you shame that?
Yeah.
Oh, I am so on board. Bring that in sooner.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, I can't wait for that story.
I mean, that was the one thread that in CC3, when it wasn't wrapped and she ran off and we didn't see her. That was the one that I was thinking, yes.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I don't want any more. Yeah. Don't give me any more.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Next week, we'll be exploring chapters 52 through 56 of A House in Earth and Blood.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo. You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle booktalkforbooktalk.
Bye.
I just want to say thank you for tuning in. And hope you stick around for next week, guys.